There is a verse in 2 Timothy, chapter 4, verse 3 of 2 Timothy, that says, "For the time is coming when people will not put up with sound doctrine, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own desires." Now, this happy verse is actually a word of encouragement. You take the whole paragraph, the instruction to Timothy is keep telling the story of Jesus, keep sharing, don't lag in zeal, be humble, keep telling the story. And then it says this verse, "But know that there will be people who won't listen to you, and that's okay." And then the verse immediately after says, "But continue to be humble and keep telling the story and do your work, and it will be okay." So the whole paragraph is meant to be a word of encouragement. Sometimes people don't listen when we try to share the good news. That happens. The verse, unfortunately, often gets used as a weapon thrown at people that one disagrees with. A couple of years ago, we had a young man visit at the Wednesday service, shook his hand, introduced myself. He didn't hang around for a chat and left. Later, I got an email. The email sent to me through our website in a way that I couldn't respond to it. This person said, "Based on what you said, I have one thing to tell you." And then he quotes this verse. Didn't say what I had said to upset him, just sent me that verse to let me know I was on the wrong track in his mind. And I thought to myself when I read it, well, I hope he got it out of his system so the rest of his day is better. Right? And he never came back. But there is this tendency, isn't there? There is this tendency, even among religious folks, to be mean and to tell other people they're bad and wrong. There is this tendency to hurl Bible verses at each other. And I don't think Bible verses were ever intended as weapons. But there is this tendency that we have to do that. I know in my own life, I have to really work hard at this, and sometimes I fail. Usually, the only place I really fail at this is when someone tells me women shouldn't be ordained, and quicker than I can think, I'm firing Romans 16 at them and just generally having hysterics. Right? But I want to suggest to you that this human tendency to tell other people they're wrong, and this human tendency to get a rush of a feeling of identity by separating myself from the other person, I want to suggest to you that that is at one end of a continuum that stretches all the way to shootings in synagogues and mosques and churches. And I want to further suggest that when we work on this end of our own tendency to make other people bad and wrong and to throw Bible verses at them or whatever, what we do by working on that and trying to stop that is we help the whole world work on eliminating the conditions that produce this other end, where we tell people how bad and wrong they are to affirm our own identity and then shoot them. I remember some years ago, my friend Vicki Garvey, many of you met her several years ago when she preached here. Vicki was just sputtering with upset. And I'm like, "Vicki, what's wrong?" She had encountered a video game that was produced by a group where the player is a Christian and has to convert all the other Jews and Muslims or kill them to win the game.
I join her in her upset about that.
Right? But that's part of the problem, isn't it? That's part of the problem. We have this tendency to define ourselves in opposition to others. And we have a tendency to live down to our worst potentials when we do that. I have often said in consulting with churches that many times churches have the worst fights when you and I get together and conspire to bring out the worst in each other. And we do that with accusation and with hostility and upset. That's how we do that. I want to suggest to you that the readings today offer us a different vision, that they offer us a different approach altogether. In the reading from the book of Acts, you know, it's an interesting reading. The apostles and disciples are, they're doing what we think was a common practice in the very earliest days of the church, which is to worship in the temple, and then on, especially on Saturdays, to go home at sundown, which makes it Sunday. They go back to one of each other's homes and have the community meal, which is the beginnings of the Eucharist. So, but they're still going into the temple to worship. And when they go into the temple to worship, they talk about Jesus. They preach. And the synagogue officials, the temple officials, have them arrested and put in jail and tell them don't do that. And they get released. They get miraculously released. And they're back in the temple the next week, and they're doing it again. So the temple officials have them arrested again, and they bring them before them, and they say, "Why are you doing this? You're trying to pin this man's blood on us," say they suspiciously. And the apostles' response, which you get a better sense of with a bigger chunk of the text than what we get this morning, is, look, we have to do what God tells us to do. And God tells us to tell people about Jesus, whom, yeah, you did kill, but that's not the hot issue here. The hot issue is God raised him from the dead. And he brings liberation and peace and forgiveness to everyone, even you, if you'll accept it. So the interesting irony here is that the temple leaders are expecting his blood, you're trying to pin his blood on us, as in finding guilt. And the apostles are trying to pin Jesus' blood on them, as in finding redemption. Right? So it's an, it, so they're clashing over the blood, in a way, but with very different meanings. Very, very different meanings. And so the temple officials are expecting the worst. They're feeling defensive. They're feeling guarded. They're feeling like there's a power play at foot. In today's language, the ultimate power play is the use of guns in a house of worship. It's what they're expecting. The apostles and disciples are trying to offer them liberation and freedom. Much the same is true in the gospel. Poor Thomas, we call him Doubting Thomas. Really sad. Because Thomas ultimately only asks for what the other leaders got. Jesus showed up, showed them his hands and his side, breathed on them, did all these wonderful things while Thomas wasn't there. And they go and they tell Thomas the story. And they say, "We've seen the Lord." And Thomas is like, "Well, I want to see him too. I want to put my hands in the mark of the nails and in his side. I want to see him too. You got two? I want two." So Jesus shows up and he doesn't critique Thomas. He says, "Oh, Thomas, here. You want to see? Now guess what?" says Jesus. You see and believe. There are going to be a whole bunch of people who believe because you tell the story. That's your job. Go and tell the story. This is the new covenant our collect talks about, the new covenant of reconciliation. The new covenant of reconciliation is the bringing together of what was once divided. That's what the word reconciliation means, to bring together that which was divided. And when we're hostile and defensive and we define ourselves in opposition to the other person, we're increasing the division rather than bringing together what was once divided. And what we're given in the resurrection of Jesus Christ is the promise that we can be brave about bringing together. We can be brave and confident about bringing the divided together in the risen one. Our identity is in the risen Christ. The biggest threat of all to our identity is death, and he's handled that. So it's an invitation into the new covenant of reconciliation, an invitation into the bringing together, into the gathering together, an invitation into stop defining ourselves in opposition to others and making them bad and wrong. Instead, proclaiming, friends, there's lots of grace in Jesus Christ. All I'm here to do is share grace. That's the challenge that we're given today. That's the challenge we're given by these readings. That's the challenge we're given by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We love, I love it every Easter when we sing the Troparion. And I love celebrating the triumph of Christ over death. And what that triumph of Christ over death is meant to do is not only reassure us and bind our life to God's life, but it's also meant to give us courage. Courage to be people who unite instead of divide. Courage to be people who don't make others bad and wrong, to feel a strong sense of self. Courage to not use Bible verses as projectiles. Courage to proclaim love and grace, not rightness and wrongness. To live into the promises of the resurrection is to live into the new covenant of reconciliation. And to do so joyfully and bravely. To take the courage that's needed to bind the broken back together.